This is undeniably a most remarkable phenomenon, for which it is hard to find either a parallel or an explanation. A society seems suddenly to have become illiterate, and to have remained so for centuries. How and why this happened we do not know. Point 1. Bohrer expresses his wonder at this astounding state of affairs. It undermines any hope that the transmission of heroic poetry was maintained by a succession of written texts from the time of the Trojan War. On the one hand, the Homeric poems contain material which is older than 1200. On the other hand, Bohrer states his conviction that we can be reasonably confident that Homer worked in the latter part of the 8th century, since this suits both the latest datable elements in his details and his general outlook. Is this not an impasse? The poet separated from his subject by almost 5 centuries, with an intimate knowledge of a vanished civilization and no art of writing in between? Alan J. B. Wace challenged this view, and in his preface to Ventris and Chadwick's Documents in Mycenaean Greek, 1956, wrote that future discoveries and study would undoubtedly make clear whether the Dark Age was really dark. The orthodox view of classical archaeologists is that there was a Dark Age when all culture in Greece declined to barbarism, at the close of the Bronze Age and in the early period of the ensuing Iron Age. Even now, when it is admitted that the Greeks of the late Bronze Age could read and write the Linear B script, it is still believed by some that in the transition time, the age of bronze to that of iron, the Greeks forgot how to read and write until about the 8th century when they adapted the Phoenician alphabet. It is incredible that a people as intelligent as the Greeks should have forgotten how to read and write once they had learned how to do so. 2. Then where are the documents? What is the testimony? Letters or literary texts may well have been on wooden tablets or some form of parchment or even papyrus. Some fortunate discovery will possibly one day reveal them to us. A quarter century since this was written, nothing has been found that would substantiate this hope, as nothing was found in the preceding 80 years of excavation in Greece. In the quoted passage, the words "it is still believed by some that the Greeks forgot how to read and write" refers to almost every classicist who agrees that the Dark Age left no written record because none was written. 3. There is no scrap of evidence, writes Dennis L. Page in History and the Homeric Iliad, and no reason whatever to assume that the art of writing was practiced in Greece between the end of the Mycenaean era and the 8th century BC. 4. And 100 pages later, the Iliad preserves facts about the Trojans which could not have been known to anybody after the fall of Troy v. 5. Then back to the question 100 pages earlier, how did the truth survive through the Dark Ages into the Iliad? 6. Troy in the Dark Ages. The Dark Age enveloped Greece, it enveloped Troy too. For the site is barren of deposits which might be referred to the period c. 1100-700 BC. Not one sherd of proto-geometric pottery is known to have been found at Troy, not by Schliemann, or by Do Erpfeld, or by Blegen himself. We are now in effect asking what happened at Troy during the Dark Ages of Greece, from the beginning of the 11th to the end of the 8th century BC, and this is the answer which we must accept, that there is nothing at Troy to fill the huge lacuna. For 2,000 years men had left traces of their living there. Some chapters in the story were brief and obscure, but there was never yet a chapter left wholly blank. Now at last there is silence, profound and prolonged for 400 years. 1. This observation of Dennis Page, professor of Greek at the University of Cambridge, is in the nature of amazement. Out of a mound covering a ruined place, an archaeologist expects to extract stray objects that accumulated there in the space of centuries. In Troy there is silence profound and prolonged, as if time itself had stopped. But the same author stresses that the Iliad preserves facts about the Trojans which could not have been known to anybody after the fall of Troy v. 2. Thus not only did Homer know of the kingdom and people of Mycenae that were buried for centuries of the Dark Ages, but he knew also of the kingdom and people of Troy who, too, were dead, buried, and forgotten in the darkness of the Dark Ages. The site of Troy was reoccupied late in the 7th century, but from the fall of Troy, now put by archaeologists car. Minus 1260, until Homer's time, there was nothing on the surface of the mound that could disclose to the poet the many intricate details which he webbed into his epics. It is realized that Homer knew the scene of the Aegean coast of Asia Minor of the 8th and 7th centuries, therefore, it was argued, he could not have lived in the days of the Trojan War, or shortly thereafter, in the 12th century. A poet having composed the poems in the 12th century would not be able to introduce into them innumerable references to the Iron Age in Greece and the post-Phrygian Age in Asia Minor of the 7th century. Was the site of Troy alone in Asia Minor an archaeological void for 500 years, following that city's destruction at the end of the Mycenaean Age? The Dark Age in Asia Minor. Like Greece and the Aegean, Asia Minor has no history for a period of close to five centuries. Certain scholars disagree with this verdict, but it comes from the pen of one of the foremost authorities on archaeology and art of Asia Minor, Professor Ikram Akdal of the University of Ankara. 1. Today, 1961, despite all industrious archaeological exploration of the last decades, the period from 1200 to 750 for most parts of the Anatolian region lies still in complete darkness. The old nations of Asia Minor, like the Lycians and the Carians, the names of which are mentioned in the documents of the second half of the second millennium, are archaeologically, that is, with their material heritage, first noticeable about 700 or later. Hence the cultural remains of the time between 1200 and 750 in central Anatolia, especially on the plateau, seem to be quite irretrievably lost for us. The huge land of Asia Minor for almost five centuries is historically and archaeologically void. The cause of the interruption in the flow of history about minus 1200 is assumed to lie in some military conquest, but the Phrygians, who are supposed to have been these conquerors, did not themselves leave any sign of their occupation of the country from before minus 750. Thus the explanation that the end of the Anatolian civilization about 1200 was due to the incursion of the Phrygians is not supported by archaeological finds. According to Akdal, the repeatedly undertaken efforts to close the hiatus by relics of Phrygian art cannot be harmonized with the results of archaeological study. None of the Phrygian finds and none of the Oriental ones found with them can be dated earlier than the 8th century. Such results compel us to exclude from the study of Asia Minor between 1200 and 750 any Phrygian presence and heritage. If there is no sign of Phrygian occupation for the period, are there possibly some vestiges of occupation by other peoples? It is startling, writes Akdal, that until now in central Anatolia not only no Phrygian, but altogether no cultural remains of any people came to light that could be dated in time between 1200 and 750. Nothing was left by any possible survivors of previous occupants, namely by Hittites, and nothing by any people or tribe that could have supplanted them. Also on the rim of Asia Minor the darkness of the Dark Age is complete, in the south of the peninsula, in Mersin, Tarsus and Caratp. In recent years important archaeological work was done. Here, too, the early Iron Age, that is, the period between 1200 and 750, is enwrapped in darkness, too. Even after only a few decades of settlement a town should leave discernible relics for archaeologists, usually under such circumstances botched herds or a few beads, or a clay figurine, I found. Ash and kitchen refuse are ubiquitous finds wherever there was human habitation. But that on an area over 250,000 square miles in extent there should, as Akdal claims, be found nothing, not even tombs, from a period counted not just by decades but by centuries, actually a period of almost 500 years, is hardly less than miraculous. The Homeric question. The idea of a wide gap separating the Mycenaean Age from the historical age of Greece has gained almost universal acceptance since it was first advanced more than a century ago. Because no literary documents and almost no signs of culture could be found for that long period, it came to be known as the Dark Age. Hellenists and historians in general use the term Dark Age for the 12th, 11th, 10th, 9th, and most of the 8th centuries, or the period that lies between the Mycenaean and Archaic Ages, the latter being the opening of the Ionian period that in due course developed into the Classical period. The time from about -1200 to -750 is the Dark Age in continental Greece, on the Aegean islands and shores, and in the interior of Asia Minor. The reader may think that the term is bequeathed to us from ancient times, from Greek historians or philosophers of the Classical period. The fact, however, is that no Greek historian, philosopher, or poet used the term Dark Age or Dark Centuries or any substitute for such a concept, nor did Roman writers, much occupied with the Greek past, have a concept of a Dark Age for the period following the Trojan War and preceding the historical age in Greece. The term, and the concept as well, are a creation of modern scholarship in Hellenic studies for the period from which we have neither history nor literary remains. If, as most scholars now believe, Homer lived and created at the end of the 8th or the beginning of the 7th century, and if the Trojan War took place just before the beginning of the Dark Age, he could hardly have omitted to refer in some direct or only indirect way to the more than 4 centuries of the Dark Age that separated him from the epic events he described. Why did no poet, and Greece had many, ever mention a lengthy Dark Age, if only in passing? Neither Herodotus, nor Thucydides, 1 nor Xenophon, the Greek historians, had anything to say about a 4 or 5 centuries span that separated the Greek history from the Mycenaean. Greece had also many outstanding philosophers. Then how are we to explain that a period, not covering just a few decades, but more than 4 centuries, is passed over in silence by Greek poets, philosophers and historians alike? Should not Aristotle or, much later, Diodorus of Sicily or Pausanias in their voluminous writings have devoted as much as a single passage to the Dark Age, if there was one? Neither the Roman writers, nor the chronographers of the Renaissance, applied themselves to the illumination of the Dark Centuries, and it is only since the last decades of the 19th century that the term Dark Age in Greek history has been used. Despite being separated by 5 centuries from the Mycenaean civilization of which he sings, Homer displays a surprising knowledge of details no longer existent in the Greek world of his day. We know from the archaeological evidence that Homer attempts to archaeologize, even to take us into the Mycenaean age. Yet in Homer's day there was no science of archaeology, no written history to assist the historical novelist. Where then did he get these details from the past? So writes one author in the preface to his translation of the Iliad. 2. As an example of such knowledge, the author cites Homer's description of Nestor's cup with doves on its handles, a description that fits a vessel actually disinterred in the Mycenaean strata, which according to the conventionally written history were deposited some 5 centuries before Homer began to compose his epics. The technique of metal inlay of the shield of Achilles, described by Homer in the Iliad, was practiced in Greece in the Bronze Age and disappeared before its close, and apparently never returned there. The boar's tusk helmet described by Homer was reconstituted by Rykel from slivers of tusk found in many Bronze Age graves. It is difficult to imagine Homer transmitting a description of an object which we could not visualize. For 4 centuries at least no one could possibly have seen a boar's tusk helmet. On the other hand, in Homer are found descriptions of objects which cannot have found a place there before the 7th century. One such object is the clasp which fastened the cloak of Odysseus when on his way to Troy. It points to the 2nd decade of the 7th century as the time of the composition of the Odyssey, unless it is an interpolation, the dates of which could not be much earlier or later than the first half of the 7th century. If the Mycenaean age closed with the 12th century and Homer composed at the end of the 8th, 4.5 centuries constitute a hiatus, and separate the poet from the objects he describes. The blending of elements testifying to the Mycenaean age together with elements the age of which could not precede the 7th and certainly not the 8th century is a characteristic feature of the Iliad. Some scholars have expended enormous efforts in trying to separate passages of the epics and ascribe their authorship to different generations of poets, from contemporaries of the events to the final editor of the poems in the 7th century. But all these efforts were spent unprofitably, and their authors at the end of their labors usually declared their perplexity. The following evaluation is from the pen of M.P. Nielsen. To sum up, there is considerable evidence in Homer which without any doubt refers to the Mycenaean age. The Homeric poems contain elements from widely differing ages. The most bewildering fact is, however, that the Mycenaean elements are not distributed according to the age of the strata in the poems. Nielsen continued, the Mycenaean and the Orientalizing elements differ in age by more than half a millennium. They are inextricably blended. How is it credible that the former elements were preserved through the centuries and incorporated in poems whose composition may be about half a millennium later? 3. The allies of Priam. I must admit that not so long ago I tended to consider the Trojan War as a legend, with more mythology in it than history. Neither in its cause nor in its conduct did this conflict seem to reflect historical events. The cause of the war, according to tradition, was a seduction or abduction of the spouse of one of the Helladic chiefs, and this, we are told, raised the leaders of all Hellas to undertake a mobilization and campaign to the coast of Asia and to endure hardships for 10 years, leaving their own spouses to be ravished or besieged by suitors in the meantime. And if Hissalik is the site of Troy, there is the additional incongruity of a great war effort the goal of which was to capture a fortress occupying not much more than 2 acres of land, Troy vs. Kyle Bludgeon, the last excavator of the site. And what of the participation of Ares, Athena, Zeus, and other divinities? The emphasis is on the courage and proficiency of a few single heroes who trace their descent, and in some cases even their parenthood, to various deities and other mythological figures, that is in the case of Achilles. With the end of the siege of 10 years' duration and the fall of Troy, the navy of the Achaeans, of which the second book of the Iliad gives a record enumerating the number of ships that carried the warriors from each of the cities won, is as if no more existent. Victory and triumph are followed by only a few wretched returns home. Nothing is heard of the return to Greece of the Achaeans, victorious in war, as an organized force. We hear of single warriors, like Agamemnon, the leader of the expedition, returning only to find violent death waiting for him in his own town and house or, like Odysseus, spending another 10 years striving to reach home by a roundabout way. Those of the heroes who succeed in returning find their wives, some faithful, some unfaithful, some in cohort with their scheming lovers and having to be avenged by their children, but little is said of the continuing royal houses, whether of Agamemnon in Mycenae, or of Menelaus in Sparta, or of Odysseus in Ithaca, or of Nestor in Pylos. Then in a matter of hardly half a generation a curtain descends on Achaean Greece, which presumably for close to 500 years presents only a picture of void enveloped in primeval darkness. Nothing is known of the subsequent history of these city-states, the personal tragedies having ended in family bloodbaths. It is as if in the theater the curtain descended for the last time, the lights are extinguished, the hall hurriedly locked, and then 500 years of impenetrable darkness. Yet a success of the protracted expedition, if undertaken, as some scholars have theorized, to protect the marine route through the Hellespont, across the Black Sea, and to the Caucasian coast, should have made the Huns, having forged their national unity in war, exploit the success by expansion of overseas trade and traffic. The curtain of darkness descends also on Troy, and the void endures there almost as long as in Greece, though it is presumed that some wretched inhabitants settled in hovels, but not before centuries passed. Of the defenders of Troy, from among those who survived the siege, we read also very little, as if they evaporated into thin air, with the exception of Aeneas and his household, and he, like Odysseus, spends a decade or so in wanderings, before reaching Italy. Strangely, in that substantial portion of the enormous literature on the Trojan War and Troy that I consulted, I scarcely ever found a discussion of the nationality of the people of Troy. 2. In the Iliad they are regularly referred to as the people of Priam, their king, but this is not an ethnic designation. Thus while it is known that the besiegers of Troy were Achaeans, also called Danaans, and it is generally accepted that they were Mycenaean Greeks, actually the last generation of them, sometimes designated as the heroic generation, the question of which race were the people of Priam was left unanswered by Homer. But at least let us look at Priam's allies. Here some clear indications come to the fore, and if we are still not helped in our pursuit, which nation did the Achaeans fight at Troy? At least we see a ray of hope that, by knowing the allies we may be guided to the proper time. By knowing the correct century of the events we may obtain an insight into the interplay of nations and races and perhaps come to realize the true reason for the conflict that summoned the Achaean host to the Troad, the region surrounding Troy. Phrygians are named as allies of Priam ; 3. Also Ethiopians are counted among his allies. The identification of both these nations carries indications as to the century to which the most famous war of ancient times needs to be ascribed. Of the Phrygians it is told that their origin stems from Thrace, north of Macedonia, west of the Hellespont. The time of their migration to Asia Minor is not known. No Phrygian antiquities from before the first half of the 8th century have been found, 4, and the opinion is expressed that Homer's reference to the Phrygians is an anachronism. It seems that in one of the earliest waves of the 8th century migrations the Phrygians moved from Thrace over the Hellespont to Asia Minor. Tradition has it that the first king in their new domicile was Gordias, and the story of his selecting the site for his capital Gordian is a well-known legend. 5. The son of Gordias, Midas, is even more than his father an object of legendary motifs. Whatever he touched turned to gold, he had the ears of an ass, yet he was a historical figure as well who, according to the Chronicle of Hieronymus, reigned from 742 to -696.6. Soon the Phrygians came into conflict with the Assyrians who opposed the penetration of newcomers into central Asia Minor, and Sargon II. -726 to -705, the conqueror of Samaria and of the Israelite tribes, moved westward to stop the penetration of the Phrygians. 7. Altogether the Phrygian kingdom in Asia Minor had a short duration. 8. Already the Corti brothers, the early excavators of Gordian, noted that of the royal mounds, Kurgans, only three could be dated before the Sumerian invasion of the early 7th century, which put an end to the Phrygian kingdom, and probably the number of royal successions did not exceed this number. 9. Little is known of its history besides the fact that -687 Gordian was overrun by the Cimmerians. The Cimmerians came from the north, traversing the coastal routes of the Caucasus. Their original homeland is often thought to have been the Crimea in southern Russia. They occupied Gordian, displacing the Phrygians westward, toward the Lydian kingdom and the Aegean coast. While the displaced Phrygians may have continued to live for a time in the western confines of Asia Minor, the year -687 saw the end of their kingdom. It appears that the Cimmerians did not tarry for any length of time in Phrygia, like the Scythians, a nomadic race from the steppes of Russia, who soon followed them on the coastal roads of the Caucasus. They were but transient conquerors. The time they came from their native land, -687 or soon thereafter, 10, makes it quite certain that they were put on their migration by the natural events of that year, described at some length in Worlds in Collision, 11, by the worldwide upheavals, earthquakes, frightening apparitions in the sky, as well as by the changes in climate that made many accustomed pursuits and agricultural practices obsolete. -687, or possibly -701, was also the year that Sennacherib met his famous debacle as described in the books of Isaiah, 2 Kings, and 2 Chronicles, while threatening Jerusalem with capture and its population with eviction and exile. Phrygians as allies of Priam, in the hinterland of the Troad, in conflict with the Cimmerians, themselves pursued by the Scythians, would limit the period of the Trojan War to the years between -720 and -687. After the passing of the Cimmerians, Phrygia was exposed to the occupation and influence of neighboring states, in particular to that of the Lydian kingdom to the west, with its capital at Sardis. Lydia was ruled by Gyges, a great king who played a conspicuous role in the politics of the Near East. He was on friendly terms with Assurbanipal, grandson of Sennacherib, king of Assyria. Then, feeling the threat of the growing Assyrian Empire, he supported Egypt's rise to independence. He sent Ionian and Carian detachments to Psammeticus, king of Egypt, which enabled that country to free itself from the supremacy of Assyria. The Homeric epics were created on the Asia shore of Asia Minor. It is most probable that Homer was a contemporary of Gyges, king of Lydia. 12. This view was also offered and supported with arguments by Emil Myro. Moreover, Myro ascribed also the very events of the poems to the time of Gyges. 13. The allies of Priam also included Ethiopians under Memnon. 14. The Ethiopian allies of Priam must date in all probability to the period when the Ethiopians were one of the most honored nations, highly regarded for their military prowess. What is called here Ethiopians were actually Sudanese. In Egyptian history, the Ethiopian dynasty and their most glorious period is dated from ca. -712 to -663, when Ashurbanipal pursued Terhaka to Thebes, occupied it, and expelled the Ethiopian from Egypt proper. The tradition concerning Memnon, the Ethiopian warrior who came to the help of Troy, would reasonably limit the time of the conflict also to the end of the 8th and the beginning of the 7th century. 15. The possibility of an Ethiopian landing at Troy in the days of the Ethiopian pharaoh Terhaka need not be dismissed because of the remoteness of the place, as just said, close to the middle of the 7th century, and possibly at an earlier date. Gyges, the king of Sardis, sent in the reverse direction Carian and Ionian mercenaries to assist the Egyptian king Psammeticus in throwing off the Assyrian hegemony. Thus it seems that if the participants in the Trojan War all belong to the 8th–7th century, Homer, who is thought to have lived at the end of the 8th century or the beginning of the 7th, must have been either a contemporary of the Siege of Troy, or separated from it by one generation only. A correct historical placement of the Trojan War may contain a clue to its real cause. We can surmise that the Heladic city-states, alarmed by rumors of hordes of Cimmerians, preceded by dispossessed Phrygians, pushing towards the Hellespont, united under the leadership of Agamemnon and moved across the Aegean Sea to preclude the invasion of their land. Should the migrating Cimmerians or displaced Phrygians attempt to cross the straits into mainland Greece? Troy was located in the vicinity of the Hellespont, crossed by armies in ancient times, by Alexander, by Dariusi, and by other conquerors before them. While the Greek expedition may have had some limited success, its forces were wrecked and dispersed in the natural upheavals that accompanied the fall of Troy. Aeneas. Following the fall of Troy, Aeneas, son of Priam, a Trojan hero second only to Hector, fled the fortress. He lost his wife in the escape, himself carrying his aged father on his back and leading his young son by the hand. This is the way Virgil, in the 1st century before our era, imagined the beginning of Aeneas' travels. But already before Virgil, the fate of Aeneas was the subject of poetic tradition. Virgil's creation is regarded as the greatest of Roman epics. Virgil, however, studied the subject drawing on Greek authors. Upon visiting Thrace and the islands of the Aegean Sea, and following a sojourn on Crete, Aeneas and his little band of companions landed at Carthage. The queen Dido fell in love with him. His refusal to make Carthage his home and Dido his wife caused her, upon his departure, to take her own life. Aeneas' further wanderings brought him finally to Latium in Italy, the land of the Latini. According to the Roman legendary tradition, he became the progenitor of the Romans through his son Ascanios, the first king to reign in the new capital of Latium, Alba Longa, of which Rome was a dependent city, or, in another version, through Numitos in direct descent from Ascanios. But a more popular tradition had Aeneas himself as the founder of Rome. The Greek historian Timaeus, ca. -346 to ca. -250, followed this tradition. A still better known legend has Romulus for the founder of Rome. Sometimes Romulus is made a descendant of Aeneas and Ascanius. Rome was founded, according to Varro, in -753.1.